Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Judith from Stereocycles, and you're listening to the Wheel Suckers podcast.
Today we're talking to Judith about wheel building, gravel bikes, and the Stereocycles head of HR, Nola the Nosebeast.
This show is brought to you by our Third Wheels. Want to support Jenny and Alex? Become a Third Wheel supporter and help us make episodes in 2021. Give us a saddle push with a one-off donation, or become a £3 a month stabilizer, or a £5 a month Third Wheel. Visit wheelsuckerspodcast.com for details.
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm an ex-cycling industry social media maven, full-time creative goof now, and I own 1.5 bikes. Therefore a cyclist. And I'm joined by my stoker.
Jenny's stoked to be back. I'm the director of the London Bike Kitchen, author of How to Build a Bike, and co-founder of the Women of Colour Cycling Group. We've got a guest today.
We have a guest. Our first guest of 2021.
First guest of, like, us being away for almost a year.
Shh. No, we never went away. Shh.
We were never gone.
It's just a blip.
Guest, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Judith. I'm director and wheel builder of one of the directors and one of the wheel builders now of Stereocycles.
So, our first question is, what would the Stereo Wikipedia article say?
Stereo Wikipedia article. So the short version would probably be Stereocycles was naively founded in 2015. They make hand-built bicycle frames and wheels from their cute little workshop in East London in Leytonstone. Current employees, 5 to 6-ish.
It was started by you and your partner Sam, yeah?
Yeah.
And exactly, you divide the labor up. Sam's the frame builder and
Sam's frame builder. It started with just us. I'm a wheel builder and Sam's a frame builder. That's it. We live and work together, so we try to keep our things a little bit separate, but which is healthier.
That's tough. That's really tough.
Sam's always specifically made a point of not learning anything about wheels, so you literally cannot ask him anything.
That's good.
About wheels.
That's wonderful.
That's clever. In a way. Clever by not being clever.
Yeah.
He's like, no, that's really sweet. He's like, you know what? That's your thing. That is your thing. I'm not going to tell you how to do that. And vice versa, I'm guessing. Like, you're frame building.
Oh my God, frame building, no. It's too complicated.
Wheel building's not.
I think it's a lot less complicated than frame building. That's what, yeah,
definitely. It can be. So where did the name come from? Because it's very strange.
There's not a really an exciting story there, not really. We was just kind of not knowing what to name it for a long time. Because initially we kind of thought we were going to, focus on the frame building. And most frame builders name that after themselves. Mm-hmm. And Sam's name is Sam Taylor. But he really, really didn't want to name it after himself. So we were just trying to figure out stuff for a long time, like names with bears in it or whatever. Just, I don't know. It's really hard to name something. It took us forever. Yeah. But then, I don't know, the word stayer, I don't really know. And then we realized that there was stayer cycling, which is like journey cycling, like motorbike track cycling that doesn't really, well, it might still exist actually. Stayer racing.
I think they still do it at Velodrome, right? Like where you cycle behind a...
Yeah, so they do journey racing, I guess, which is like, I think it's just the more modern version of it, but it's not with a specific bike. Whereas stayer cycling or stayer track racing is like a very with a specific stayer bike, which kind of touches the front of the, it touches the back of the motorbike, which has a little wheel attached to it on the back, so you kind of ride up against the motorbike that you're riding with, and I think the front wheel is smaller. Oh, I've kind of forgotten exactly what it is, but yeah. Anyway, and then it just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like a good name when we came up with it. Yeah, happy with it, stuck with that.
I like that word, I'm used to it. And then I'll go into, actually, I still think about and loved the beer bike that you made and showcased at Bespoke.
It's a good bike.
I think it was just fun to see a cargo bike with a keg on it and then the like little beer pump.
Do you
still have it?
We've got a carcass of the cargo bike. And then the thing is, it never, full disclosure, we didn't, so it was a cable steering cargo bike, and the cables that we used weren't strong enough for when the cargo bike was fully loaded. And we just never got round. We know which cables to get and which ones to rebuild it with, and it'll work, I think, but we haven't done it yet. So now it's just been hanging up. Ah, we just like, just always so overworked. I'm sure you both know what it's like. And you just like, I don't know. And now it's just been hanging up at the top of the workshop for how long has it been?
It's like a rainy day job, isn't
years?
It?
Oh yeah. God. Yeah, so yeah, the beer keg we hired from the keg in like the system we hired from Clapton Craft, which is a little like brewery shop thing in, well, yeah,
around,
yeah, around Clapton.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we don't have the beer thing, but that was, it was fun because it was like a, it was a way to, I don't know, get people over.
Yeah, just
it was our first time there.
Yeah, you go around the bike show and like there's all these like slightly intimidating bikes at Bespoked, a frame builders festival in Bristol, if you're not aware. But you walk around and like sometimes, yeah, there isn't a reason to talk to somebody, or you're like, oh, nice paint job, and they go, mm-hmm. And then you're just like, but there's someone like, hey, would you like a little bit of free beer? And you're like, from the bike. The bike's gonna pour the beer for you. You're like, hell yeah. It was a really good like bike beer icebreaker.
Yay. That's good. Yeah, no, exactly, that's what it was. We just spent the entire time chatting. It was also really nice because it was a way for us to meet all of the other people showing there, because like, yeah, it was literally our first time there. It's like the only, for our kind of niche, it's like the only bike show in the country really that's for us. And yeah, it was just nice to have an excuse to meet, because like, you know, everybody gets, I'm a bit intimidated by most people, so like, and you know, other people who have been in the industry a lot longer than you, it's nice to have an icebreaker with them as well. So it's a nice excuse to meet other people. Yeah,
I thought that was great. And I guess I want to go on to ask, like, what other weird and wonderful bikes have you made?
There's a couple in the pipeline at the moment that are quite fun, actually. But one that we've made, a Eurostar hack bike.
What?
Which is now...
Tell me more.
Hack bike? Yeah, what? Wait, unpack that for me?
Which is totally, like, unusable in the world of no travel. But we... and it's an absurd bike. So it's... firstly, it's absurd because it's Sam's size and Sam's quite tall, so... And he has got really long legs, so I mean, like, the saddle comes up to, like, yeah, probably, I don't know, just my chest
head
or
height.
Something. It's just massive. And it's this, like, rigid mountain bike thing with, like, a steel fork and 29ers, big-ass tires. So it's a massive bike, but he's made it so that the frame comes apart at the top of the seat stays, and at the bottom brackets, at the yoke.
So the rear triangle comes apart.
Exactly. So the rear triangle comes apart, and then I made these two bags out of, I forget what it's called. It's like the tent material. It's like really lightweight. And it folds up really, really mini. So I made these two bags with straps, and he took the bike to Denmark to see our friend there. And he could just literally fold this entire massive bike into these two very large bags, but the bags then fold up mini, and then just like walked onto the Eurostar with it.
Nice.
And then took the train to Denmark.
Nice.
It's like a hack, it's ridiculous.
So heavy. but yeah.
Yeah, but it saves you. I forgot how much it is, but if you want to, like, each way it's like 25 pounds. Yeah, you have to reserve it.
Yeah.
They don't pack it down. If you don't get one of the two free spots for ready-built bikes, like, you have to get it packed down into boxes. And I think they have the boxes there, but still.
Bike boxes are one of those things that everyone assumes someone's got. And no one has them.
Is that what's happened to you?
Look, Mom, when people are like, have you got, can we just borrow a bike box? It's like, I'm going to stop you there. You can't borrow one because we don't have one.
Oh, you mean like a cardboard one?
Yeah.
Cardboard and plastic.
Yeah.
Like, people just think they're like magical things that exist.
Yeah, people ask us all the time as well.
Yeah.
The funny thing is when I was in Munich, I had to get a cardboard box to pack my bike back up to get back to London, and I went to 6 different bike shops and just was so lucky that obviously the last one had one.
Yeah, you just got a bike showroom. Yeah.
I had to ride across town with this giant bike box, and it was so not safe. It was like a sale.
Yeah, a quick way to get a bike shop to hate you is to ask for a bike box.
Yeah.
Maybe not even say hi first.
I mean, obviously, go to a bike shop that sells bikes. They will have them.
That's a step one, I think. Yeah, so that bike's quite fun. And we've got another cargo bike idea. Like, it's not that wacky, but we're going to do another little, like, a small cargo bike, like a with a small front wheel. That's the plan for this coming year.
Nice.
Sam also wanted that one to be foldable, but since... Oh God, because he, but I don't think that's going to happen. It can't be everything. I don't think. Now that we don't travel anymore, the priorities of like things that pack up into carryable items, suddenly that's disappeared from. Yeah.
For now, true. I think it will still come back.
No, I know, but like when you're thinking about fantasy bikes, all of a sudden that doesn't come into your mind anymore. And then our friend is working with us on a little, this is going to be ridiculous, a little balance bike with, they're going to get the wheels like injection molded with recycled plastic. So it's not, I'm not going to involve any wheel making. It's just going to be these solid little recycled plastic wheels.
Oh, that's
a massive
great seat.
Cool.
That's so ridiculous. Cool.
And ridiculous. But yeah, quite fun. And then the next Grödinger model is going to be like a mix and match wheel size. The OMG, like a big tire mix and match, so that you can do like a 27.5 on the front and a 29er on the rear, or the other way around.
Oh wow,
which would be fun.
So this is your foray into gravel, yeah? The Grödinger.
Yes. So the Grödingers are the, as the name suggests, obviously the gravel bikes. Yeah.
Is it like a cross between like Schrödinger's cat and gravel?
So yeah, the Schrödinger thing is a thing, yes. I don't remember how it relates.
Oh, it's like the gravel doesn't exist outside unless you go outside? Da-dum-tsh.
No. Is that the cat thing?
The
Schrödinger's cat is, the cat doesn't, well, does the cat exist in the box? But the only way you can check is by looking in the box, and if you look in the box, the cat dies.
Oh, I thought it was, it's just a paradox because you cannot know if the cat's in there. So before you check it, it's like the box contains the cat, but it also does not contain the cat.
Yeah, so you can never really check if the cat's there or not. So you'll never know if the gravel's there unless
I think that's it. because a gravel bike in itself is like an aspiration, like it doesn't actually mean anything.
True.
And you don't know what it's going to be until you're there.
It can exist without gravel, but classics, you don't always know where gravel's going to be. Especially if you plan something and then it's not there. Right?
Like, still trying to fit in which bit is the cat. So you're saying that the gravel itself is the cat?
Yes.
The gravel both exists and does not exist. Yes. And that's okay. That is the universe, apparently. I don't know. But like, can you explain a bit more about this trend? Because I feel like that's the new, everyone's like, ooh, a gravel bike. But what's a gravel bike?
Yeah, and I guess for people
who
don't know what a gravel bike is. Yeah.
I guess it is like a do it all off the beaten path adventure bike without, so it's not like, it's not, well, it's obviously not a road bike. It's a lot more fun than a cyclocross bike, which is restricted by its, how would you say, by what is UCI legal. So like there's a tire max, which is 33C for a cyclocross. And actually, like, it's a, like, that's what the sports is about. It's like a road bike off road. So it's in between a cyclocross bike and a mountain bike. And it just means you can, it's just an enabler of fun and adventure, isn't it?
You should call it the enabler.
Yeah, the enabler sounds good.
It's just for fun. Yeah, it is like for adventuring and for fun off road, and literally like it can do anything because its tires are big, so it can do mud and it can do pretty off roady stuff. But it's mostly for being off road, but not totally, you know, mountaineering or downhilling.
So what's the comparison with a mountain bike then? Because I imagine some people are aware. So, like, I mean, a mountain bike is an off-road bike.
Exactly. But so it's like a mountain bike is also not fun. A mountain bike's not fun to ride on the road, and is not so much fun to ride on like gravel paths, because it's quite cumbersome and, well, it's generally bigger. But I mean, basically, in a way, it is what it was, an old school, very similar to what was an old school fully rigid mountain bike. But this, I guess, is a bit more of an everything bike. And it is fun and comfortable to ride on the road. Maybe if you have absolutely massive knobbly tires, then less so. But still, actually, it's still made to be comfortable on almost all, well, a lot of terrains. Yeah. I guess that's it.
And is the issue with gravel bikes, they're not really, they can only be custom made currently. Are people selling like off-the-shelf gravel bikes?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. All the big companies are like Canyon.
It's way
stuff
more fun to get custom.
That's
the dream.
Yeah, so we're trying to do like we've got kind of off the peg sizes of frames, not of we were gonna try to do a couple of like bike build options. But still, we still offer, because most people, you know, like it's like, you know, you could be one of the sizes that we offer, but it could also be that it would be better if it was shorter or longer or taller or, you know, or shorter vertically or what's the other word? Laterally. It just you can fall in between the sizes, basically. And so we still do custom options, but we are trying to offer some off the peg stuff. Because you don't need custom necessarily. A lot of people don't, but some people do. Yeah. But either way, it is a custom bike. Maybe it's not a custom frame if the right frame size fits you perfectly, but you can still, it's nice to put a bike together in the way that works for you. Also, like, what you're going to do with it. Like, our frames, like, some of them, we can get them with three pairs of bottle bosses or just with one, because some people are going to go for, I don't know. So, like, for example, if you sell something to a hot country or to a hot area in the world, they're going to want three pairs of bottle bosses, because they're going to have to carry a lot of water. If they're here, they might not. And if they only do it for short little like jaunts around the forest here around London, then you don't need so much water. You just really don't. Or if you want to be able to mount mud guards or a rack or whatever, then we can still customize that, because we only paint them afterwards, so we can still make little adjustments even if you have a set size. So yeah, it's always going to be custom to a degree.
That's the joy of bikes, I think, is they always have that kind of pick and mix.
Are you getting any like weird requests now like with these new things happening with bikes, or you know, what strange requests have you gotten?
What do you mean with new things happening with bikes? Like,
What's the new thing in bikes?
There's always a new trend, right? Like everyone's like 650Bs now, or I want, you know, tubeless, or you know, has anyone requested strange, weird things? I don't know. I'm not a frame builder.
A Swift bike.
No.
A turbo bike's the new trend.
No, God,
I've not heard any of that. No.
No, don't talk about that, Alex.
No, I know. I'm just being devil's advocate.
No, I don't know. I feel like we've got less odd requests now. Cause now we're trying to do a bit more. We're trying to keep away from doing custom only, but we're trying to make the things we want to make, sort of, you know? It's very different. So when we used to kind of only do custom a few years ago, then you get all kinds of requests, I suppose.
So now you're making the decision.
But once you have that you're kind of, like, once you show people what you're about, then you get less strange requests, I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah. Or you get less, people come to you because of the things that they know that you make. I don't know. That makes sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's like choosing a tattoo artist. Like, you find the artist that you like their style, and then you have to just trust them with what they're going to make.
Yeah.
You don't tell them how to do it.
Yeah, but you don't go and ask someone who, tattoos, like, frogs to tattoo something completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want it to fit within the style that they do and knowing what they're capable of. Yeah, that's what I love about Bespoked, is you see everybody's, like, kind of styles. You get to have a little taster of, like, what people like to make or can make. It's interesting.
Yeah, and there are people who only make really wacky stuff, and they are going to get the customers that ask for really wacky stuff.
True.
Yeah, whereas we get that less. There was a guy at Bespoke who did ask us whether we could make a six-person tandem, and it was just like, no, I don't think we physically can. I don't think we have the space. I mean,
six-person tandem. Wow.
Yeah, he already had one for three people or for four. Like he had a few for many, many people.
I love that. I have unusual tastes. I collect tandems. Wow. So, Leytonstone represent, because we are Leytonstone crew. Anybody who's listening is from Leytonstone, you are also amazing. If you aren't from Leytonstone, you are also amazing. You're next to Perky Blinders. Do you have like a regular Perky... Is it? How do you say it? It's not Perky Blinders, is it?
It's Perky Blenders. The Perky coffee blenders. People.
Perky Blinders is a TV show, isn't it?
Exactly.
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah.
You should ask them where they got their name from.
Yeah. The question was, how do you have your coffee?
I have it black.
Yes.
Same. Nothing special. Black filtered.
Yeah.
Have you got into making your own coffee, or do you go and get them to make it for you?
No, we don't have. We have the grindery. God, there's a real name for this. It's not a coffee shop that we have next to us. It's their roastery, not grindery. Yes. Roastery.
Yeah. That's it.
So we don't. Yeah, we can't actually get coffee, but we do. They do. We do have a subscription with them, and they walk across the courtyard and come and give us our little subscription bag every week or two.
That's so cute.
I think we should talk a bit more about you, Judit. I want to know about your wheel building history. How did you get into it?
Well, so we started in, I guess it starts from us getting into bikes in general. We so Sam and I met at university doing a fine art degree, and I always wanted it's one of those like child fantasies of wanting to learn how to be a bike mechanic. I don't really know. I think it probably comes from, because I remember pretending when I was a kid, and I think it's to do with always I'm Belgian, and we always had the tour on the TV, or whatever, all the races or the cyclocross, everything was always on TV. So I guess that's why it got into my head. And I just thought, I brought back a bike for Sam once, and then we thought we'd spend one of the summer, like the summer holidays, which is like a few months when you're at uni, learning how to do up bikes and go. Yeah, so we spent the summer in Belgium, like, yeah, finding vintage bikes on like the Gumtree or like, yeah, secondhand website, and learned how to do them up. Weirdly, one thing led to another really quickly. And it's a really odd, fortuitous, maybe very odd situation that we really quickly got somebody, a friend of my brother's, who had a shop. They bought a shop on Bethnal Green Road, just by Brick Lane, and he was just like, "Oh, we're going to renovate this, but we're waiting for planning permission. I've got a friend who does bikes, and you guys do bikes. Do you guys together want to do a little bike shop?"
What was it called?
Isambard Cycles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we did that with Tim. And we kind of, it was mostly him doing it at first because we were still studying. We just kind of supplied bikes. And then when we finished, we were like, oh, well, we studied art. We obviously didn't have anything to do next. So,
same. I studied art. I feel you.
Hey, it gives you a good foundation. Okay. Come on.
True. Yeah. True.
No, come on.
Yeah, I mean, there's also a reason that people who do art school are often end up having their own kind of businesses, I think, because it's a similar type of thing. I don't know. Don't want to get into that, but yeah. So it's vintage bikes, basically. That's what we were doing, and we were doing up really nice vintage bikes, and I got into wheel building because vintage bikes, like good racing bikes, the frames are really well made a lot of the time. Like the ones that survive are ones that were made for professional racing, and they're good quality things. But of course, all the components around the frame, they deteriorate a lot of the time, especially wheels. I mean, they're what you break when you crash, and they corrode over time.
They're made of steel.
Or they're made of steel, yeah. All kinds of things. So we started doing custom steel builds mostly. Wow. That was kind of our main thing. And a lot of people wanted wheels, and you couldn't really get classic looking wheels, but you could still get good quality classic hubs sometimes, or classic looking hubs or like new old stock rims. And so, yeah, just, I don't know. So yeah. I started learning how to build wheels, and I got really, really obsessed with it. I throw myself into things very fully. I find it very, yeah.
It's very meditative.
I learned everything I could learn. I Googled everything. I read everything. I got every book. And I really threw myself into it, and it just kind of, yeah, went from there. Yeah. I liked it. Thought it was fun. It's nice to be, to focus on one thing, because actually I'm really not a good, I never got into being a bike mechanic apart from wheels, because it's incredibly broad.
Yeah.
For me, it's not my, like, I feel like no matter, I have a lot of respect for good bike mechanics, because I think it's, especially, you know, bike shop mechanics, because there's not one bike. Like, there are so many types of components of every kind, and gear systems. And I just think that there's so, so much to learn. And you have to know that you don't know it, and you have to spend a lot of time looking stuff up. Mm-hmm. You know, a good bike mechanic is somebody that knows that they don't know.
Yeah, and they know where to look.
Yeah, they know where to look, and they can kind of, feel their way through with every case. I mean, of course, you build on experience, but I don't know, proper bike mechanics was never really my thing.
That's
somehow
fair.
I never had the patience for that, but I do for the wheel building somehow. I don't know.
No, I was, I remember talking to Joe. So Joe used to teach wheel building at LBK, and she said, like, I'm at the point in my life where I need to decide if I go into specializing in wheel building or stay as a mechanic. And I think she's chosen the mechanic path because she's working at Clever Mics right now.
Yeah.
But I guess because you were also teaching at LBK just before the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
How did you find teaching in comparison to just building?
I really like teaching. It's very different to building because you're not. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's just, it's quite a different thing, but it's, I really liked it. It's so interesting to see, because I don't remember how fast I picked it up. I had nothing to compare it to. But when I compare all the different people you teach, it's just so interesting how people are naturally capable of certain things. So there's kind of like two bits to wheel building, that most of the time people are good at one and not so good at the other. Mm. Sometimes you get somebody who's really not very good at either, or who's very, very good at both, of course. But it's kind of two different sides of the brain. So the first one is the lacing, which is kind of the understanding how this mathematically fits together, sort of. So it's like the measuring and the steps to get the spoke lengths correct. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to measure everything. And then the lacing, which is, yeah, putting it together, putting all the spokes in place after you've measured. And that whole bit, some people, yeah. And then that's that whole like bit spatial, is kind of one bit. Yeah.
Spatial, yeah. Intelligence, isn't it? Like understanding.
Yeah, just kind of rationally understanding how something works.
Yeah.
Whereas the next bit is very intuitive. Like, you still have to understand, okay, if I tighten, then it goes to the right or goes to the left, or if I, you know, it's, but that's more intuitive, all about balance and just feeling your way through it. And kind of, that's what you people describe as the meditative bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two very different things. And it was just, I really liked the teaching. I thought it was really, really nice to see how differently people, yeah, understand things. And also, it's really nice to be asked lots of questions, because a lot of the time you get asked questions that you'd never thought of before. And or you just think, oh yeah, I've just been I taught myself, and I've just been wheel building by myself for the past so many years, and you know, I've now got to remember what a trailing and a leading spoke is, and yeah. Like all these things, and you just don't. It's really good. It's very it's good for my own wheel building as well, I think. But yeah, enjoyed it. It was fun. It's nice to teach anyway, because there was always nice people. It was always like a small group with you guys at LBK. So it was like, what, three people, four people, something like that. And they've all come there because they're interested. And all from different, totally different reasons. Like, it wasn't really a set demographic, which is, I kind of expected it to be more of like a particular, like one demographic or something, but it wasn't the case at all. It was nice.
Yeah, it was a good mix.
So we need to know, why should someone get a hand-built wheel?
A hand-built wheel. Or a wheel built for you, which are kind of two... hand-built... So actually, I think most wheels are hand-built. There are machines that do most of the work. Maybe there are machines that do all of the work, but I think most wheels are factory-line hand-built. Which isn't what we think of when you say hand-built, so it's not really what you guys mean. But actually they probably are hand-built a lot of the time.
Hand-finished, aren't they?
Like
a machine. I've seen the ones at Santa Cruz where the person has to put in the spokes.
Right.
But then it gets put into the machine. The machine does the tensioning.
Well, if you can get a really good machine, I'm sure that it can be good. But I've seen some wheels built by the supposed top of the line wheel building machines, and I thought, oh wow, that would be amazing. But the wheels are really not good.
Yeah,
so I'm sure it's possible in the future, but to have a good quality built wheel. But the sad thing is that with big bike brands, that the wheels is where they cost cut. Because they often brand it their own kind of brand, or their different brand. Like most bike brands have wheel brands within them, whereas all the other components that they use, you can Google them separately. Like, yeah, they'll use Shimano or they use SRAM. Whereas with the wheels, if you're looking at a more expensive bike, what they try to do with the wheels is they try to make them as lightweight as possible, but still cost cut, because that's what these companies are about, and they can do that with wheels. So, and when you get a light wheel set, you either has to be really expensive for it to be good. If it's not really expensive and it's really light, that means you're not going to have bearing seals, you're not going to have enough material or yeah, you're not going to have grease. I don't know. You're going to be missing, or you're not going to have like a strong enough hub body material. Yeah, so that for weight, right? And then cost cutting in terms of quality. That's just, yeah, you're not going to have the thing is with hand built, as in hand built in the sense of what you're asking, like hand built by somebody that really puts attention into it, is that you have straight and a round wheel. Straight is usually the case because it's the easiest thing to see. Round is something that as a consumer you're not going to see, but it's going to make a difference to your riding. Imagine you know, the less round your wheel gets, the less fast you're going to go, right? I mean, I don't know how much.
Yeah, no square wheels. An egg-shaped wheel, I guess.
No, yeah, exactly. But like, think about that in small degrees, right? You can get, you know, making the wheel round is really important, and it's really easy to make it not round. As in, because yeah, how much tension you put on your spokes affects that a lot. And then the last thing that you can definitely not see as a customer is how evenly tensioned and whether your spokes are at the right tension. But mostly the problem would be evenly tensioned. That's where you see.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The most problems, and the problem with it is that you get I haven't come across a single big brand wheel that is evenly tensioned. You just it's every single time. I'd really like to be proven wrong, but that's why they also don't last so long, is because you get some wheels that are taking up all of the slack, some spokes that are taking up all of the slack, and other spokes that are then going to wiggle loose because they don't have any, they're not doing anything.
And then they start to break.
Yeah. And then the other thing about having, so a wheel set for you, is that like, if it's not for you, for firstly, just for your weight, like, imagine if you buy a bike, you buy a person who buys a model bike who's 120 kilos, and the same model is bought by somebody who's 60 kilos, they're going to have exactly the same wheels on them, like exactly the same. So they often, maybe with a 16-spoke front and like a 20 rear or something if it's a race bike, and for a 120-kilo person, it's just not the right thing. So yeah, it's where they make it. I mean, it's sad that big companies do that so much, but it's good for people in my line of work, I suppose.
But it's one of the easiest ways you can like upgrade your bike, right? Because
it makes such a difference. It makes such a difference. I mean, they're the rolling, moving bit, and they're together with tires, they're your contact point. Wheels make such a difference in how your bike feels. And they have to do so much work. they have to absorb vibration and impact. You don't want them to be massively rigid things. They've got to be responsive and comfortable, but still be, you know, accelerate fast and stuff. And then you also want it to be built for you because you're going to do different things, like, you know, like gravel, for example. Some people go bikepacking on their gravel bike and that's what they do. And some people just like to go fast around the forest and have a super lightweight carbon frame. You know, it's very different. Or they like, you know, you have narrow tires or big tires. Or
what are your favorite wheels to build?
Oh,
what's your dream wheel set?
The process is always kind of the same.
What, you don't have like a dream, like favorite spokes?
Oh right, yeah. I've got. I mean, the spokes that we use, which are just the best ones. So Sapim CX Rays are super nice. They're also really nice to build with because they're bladed, and it actually means that when you use a bladed spoke holder, that it's like you can be so precise with it because you can hold the spoke in place.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you use a round spoke, then the spoke twists. You can feel it with your fingers that it's twisting, but it means you're kind of a little bit less precise with it. But I like building wheels, there's no difference between the process for different types of wheels, but I do really like building wheels that I know are going to go on adventure. Yeah. I really like that. I really like it when I know what somebody's like adventurous plans are. You know, if somebody's going to go and, you know, cross a continent, or going to go on a massive bikepacking trip, or I like that. I think that's really nice. And I also like it because then you can dot watch if they do one of the big races where they have a dot that you can watch.
It's you're like nice. My wheels are on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I like building them for knowing what they're gonna be doing more than the process difference. There's no real
You don't discriminate.
No, I mean it's all pretty similar. I mean, if somebody gives me a secondhand rim to build with, an aluminium secondhand rim, I'm not gonna enjoy it so much because it means that I'm not gonna I don't know. It's not going to be straight, so you can't be as perfect about it. You have to then find this middle ground between tension and between even tension and it being round. And it's fine. It takes a bit longer, but it's fine.
Yeah. How has COVID affected your business?
So it's been Sam and I until just us. And my mum does a bit of bookkeeping, and Nola is the head of HR, our dog. But it's been us and just us until like March. And then at the beginning of March or the end of February, we interviewed Holly and Aoife for helping us. We didn't really know. We just put a weird advert out just asking for somebody who knew a bit about photo machine and computer boxes who would be interested in helping us figure stuff out. And they so we kind of had an interview with them before we knew what was happening, and we gave them all both a couple of days each, and then when they were supposed to start, it was lockdown. And then we started remotely with them, which was interesting. And then we immediately got issues being able to get stuff in, so all of a sudden our supply dried up, so that was a bit scary. We applied for the grant, the kind of relief grant, which in the end we've used to give our employees like more days, basically. And also we've hired Ev, somebody else for wheel building, Jenny's partner.
We don't know him. No.
And now, so actually, I mean, especially on the wheels, we rely a lot on the racing season. So we didn't have a cyclocross season this year. We didn't have a road season this year, road crit. Or track. I mean, we didn't have any of the racing. So for us, that definitely had an impact. And it's been tough, but actually our supply kind of picked back up. And okay, now there's a different situation happening right now, which is that components are going to dry up, it looks like.
Because of Brexit?
It looks like Shimano and SRAM, the supply from them is going to dry up
this year by quite a bit, because they've just basically, we've just over, the whole cycling industry has kind of overextended in the last year. That's the impression we're getting. So we can't get hold of anything. We've just started wanting to provide like full bike builds, and we've had to change that again. And we're hoping that we're not going to lose frame customers, because we're hoping that it won't be too bad. We'll see. But I think for a bad situation, I think it's, we've managed to refocus. It's been nice to have some like time. It was interesting getting that grant and then putting it into paying people means that actually it's been tough, but actually it's not been bad. It's definitely not been as bad as it has been for a lot of people and for a lot of businesses. And I think because we're small, we are able to make those changes. When you can't suddenly get hold of hubs from this brand or tubing or whatever, then you can change it, because we're small and we do we build everything to order basically. So it's nice to be able to kind of be versatile like that. So it's kind of, I don't know. I'm really, really happy with where we are at the moment. I'm sure we would have been way further along with the things we've been wanting to do if it hadn't happened. But we're all right. We've survived it so far. Now since when it started, we now have like a team of people that we work with daily, and it's absolutely amazing. It's so, so nice to have people working with us. Absolutely love it. You've got
like a nice team going. It's really, it makes a difference for sure.
Oh, it's so nice. A little before Christmas, I was just like, oh, I was just gushing a bit at them, because I was so, it's like, oh my God, the end of the year, and I feel so, so excited about where we are. So happy to have them here.
That's so nice. I'm absolutely grinning. That's so sweet. Like,
yeah, I adore them. It's like, yeah, it's so nice. It's so nice. It's the best thing that's happened. So that's happened during COVID. Not really because of COVID, I don't think. But that grant, which we did need, because it's hard to say we applied for it because we desperately thought we would need it. And in the end, we've used it in a way to grow, but we've not really grown because of the way that the industry's gone. Anyway, all good in the end so far.
That's good. That's good.
I am curious though, because you mentioned like there might be like a parts shortage. Like,
have you not heard about this?
No.
Oh, right.
But then again, I've passed on my stock ordering to Tim, so I'm just like, I'm not au fait with kind of what's happening with our suppliers.
So before Christmas and just after, but we've stopped now, we were going to start offering full bikes. We can't do that anymore because we can't get hold of any of the components. And maybe the people listening to the podcast will be more aware of what's happening, and definitely by the time this comes out. But it seems that there is going to be, or and is, a very big shortage of all main brand bicycle components. So everything from Shimano, especially, for the next year, or at least until like late mid-summer for some bits. So things that we've ordered that we used to be able to just get right away, we've now got ETAs for like many months away. And I've been reading even articles from Belgium and stuff talking about bike shops not being able to get in any components and stuff. So it's, yeah, I think it's gonna, I mean, it makes sense, right? People that, you know, every company, every business in the world has had to slow down at some point over the last year.
Yeah. Everything slowed down, hasn't it?
But then you have an increase in demand in the cycling industry. That's also what I was wondering, was there an increase in demand for your products?
For us, I think we lost because we are not an entry level product. I think we gained and we lost. We know we lost some customers, but I'm also sure that we gained customers who are, you know, this is what they're spending their holiday money on now instead of going, you know, this is the one thing they could do So I don't. We didn't feel it as much as companies that are, you know, that deal, you know, that are like entry level bike stuff. But yeah, we did have customers that literally said, like, yeah, I'm not going to do this right now because I'm scared of losing my job. Or we've had customers who have literally, quite a few, who have said that they've lost their jobs, yeah, and that they're going to have to back out and asking for their money back, which is totally, yeah, like, yeah, it's just the way it is. It's, yeah, I mean, it's very stressful for them. But then I'm also sure that there's people who've been in, like, who have come, who maybe wouldn't have invested this much in their bike as they had. And the kind of bikes we do, right? Gravel bikes. Stuff you can do by yourself. And have
socially
fun.
Distanced.
So, I mean, like, for me, definitely, cycling off-road on a gravel bike is way more fun by yourself than cycling on the road by yourself. That's maybe me, but I don't know. It's definitely maybe a bit safer. Maybe safer. And people are thinking about that too. And it is, like you were saying earlier, it is the trend, right? So I'm sure that we've had more customers come because of this, as well as that we've lost them. Bit of both. But what it does mean is that in the future, when more people are already, you know, people who got an entry level bike this year, the joy is
more people are cycling.
And that's exactly
a good thing.
Yeah.
Tell us about Nola.
HR. So Nola, the nose beast, she well, we thought this year was gonna be tough on her because you know, we've increased our employee number by quite a lot, which as head of HR, or as the entire HR department, we thought would be a bit much. But I think I'm really proud of her. She's done so well. She's done so well.
How does she keep people in check?
She does it by pawing them from her bed. Or by pawing
in their
direction if they're too far away from her bed.
I've heard her farts are quite strong.
Yeah, only recently. It's only sometimes. I don't know what's up recently, actually. I'm sure that... I wonder what's happening. Yeah, it is. It has been pretty bad the last few months. She sits under Holly's desk. And it's just horrendous sometimes. Oh, my God.
And Holly's like, it's not me. Holly. It's not me. It's
yeah,
not
is someone
Holly.
Blaming the dog?
But she doesn't... I just don't get it because she doesn't do it at home. It's like midday is like when...
She saves them all up for work.
When her digestion just gets going. Like, she's not a stinky dog generally, but at work, yeah. At work, yeah. So maybe that is how she keeps them in check.
Yeah.
That's it. Keeps everybody on their toes.
She's like, pay attention to your work.
Literally, because they have to move away.
Yeah.
Oh, cute.
No, she likes it. She likes that there's some more people around giving her cuddles every moment of the day. It's nice. It's very good.
Oh.
She's a very chilled out dog.
Oh.
Just
so now we're going to ask a tough question because we asked you a nice question, but this is a question we've tried to make sure that we ask everybody that's on the podcast, because we found that when we were asking this question, we were only asking the people that it affected. And so the question is, what can we do to get more underrepresented groups in the cycling industry? And I guess I'm aware, like, you're not going to have the answers, but what we always want to try and do when we ask this question is just to kind of keep people thinking about it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, just to kind of make sure that it's something that's always on our minds.
I think, yeah, and I think that's exactly it. I think we talk about it a lot, and we've been. I think it's something that is on our minds all of the time. And we talk about it a lot. So I'm hoping it also kind of comes through and stuff for us, that we, you know, that it informs everything that we do. And like for example, like, we've got, like, you know, we're trying to be a bit more professional and actually try to have a marketing budget this year. And, like, then actually thinking, okay, we have to make sure that we spend that on the right things. We for ourselves want more, like, specifically, like, women buying our stuff. Like, we would just like our demographic to be a bit broader, and that's one of the things we kind of, or anybody who's not just a white male, which I feel, yeah, I don't know, I which is the reason the reason why we pay attention to that more than, like, for example, just that we have photos of non-white male people on our stuff is the fact that we do custom stuff. And we find, or I've always had, oh, this is a really difficult subject matter. I've always found that that with custom bike stuff, it kind of, it's a bit scary for somebody who maybe isn't very confident in that world, mm-hmm. or in it's not even twofold. It's got so many sides to it. So it's like, firstly, you've got to know your stuff. You've got to be a bit of, you don't have to actually, you can just get in touch and ask us, but to have the confidence to come forward and ask about having something made for you, you've got to feel confident to do that and to have the right words for it. And also maybe be interested in that to start with, because like a bike's just a bike for a lot of people, and it's a you know, like not everybody cares like what color pedals they get or which exact components or whatever. And there's like there's a barrier with this kind of work that we do that I feel that every underrepresented group in the cycling industry potentially. I don't know if people want to get into cycling, if it's about people wanting to get into cycling, then we have a hard time attracting those people, because you've got to be quite confident from the get-go. I also wonder, like, I don't know, like the feeling of being worthy of a custom thing made for you. Not that you consciously feel that, but like if it was me, I wouldn't think of getting anything custom from anybody for anything, because I don't know. Is that, do I need that? I don't know.
No, that's really interesting.
I find this. There's
explore that. That hesitation, yeah, because I think a lot of people feel that.
Yeah, you know, I don't deserve it almost.
Yeah,
but
or just not. You know, I'm not. The world doesn't revolve around me, which is a. God, I find it's really hard to talk about this without being negative against the people that, because I do think that, like for example, if most of our customer base throughout the years, and it's maybe less so now, but it has been, you know, white men, and maybe there is, because of society, there is a way that, you know, there is a feeling that, you know, rightfully also, that they are worth this special treatment. It's not that they're arrogant. They are worth a special treatment. Everybody is. But that feeling of... but that feeling is something that most other groups don't have as easily, maybe. Like, honestly, like, wheels... So many women buy wheels, but so few women buy them from us, because you have to kind of go through the steps of... getting them built for you. I'm not sure if it's always a feeling I've had about this, and it's kind of why we've been trying to figure out a way to, well, firstly show imagery, do our social media in a way that there is some diversity, but then also to an extent that our products aren't so nerdy. So like, for example, I've just changed all of the wheels so that it's still built to order, but there is a main product with a hub set, so you don't have to be a bike nerd and investigate all the different things. This main product, and then later if you want to, you can add hub grades, we've called them, so like hub upgrades.
Nice.
So if you want to be nerdy, you can be, and you can have us build whatever you want, but this main product is still really, really fucking good, and you don't get confronted with a technical question from as soon as you get on our website. I'm not entirely sure, but this is the kind of stuff, I find it really hard to talk about this kind of thing, but that's, as in, there's these feelings that I have about how we sell stuff and how we, and why certain customers do and don't come to us.
The customer journey, and it is like an intuitive nature, and people are kind of wary overall, I think. You know, yeah, even simple things like when we had physical shops, you know, if the doors open or not, like that can be a huge barrier. And yeah. Yeah. We had that a lot at Look Mum No Hands. Like
That's why we had the workshop in the cafe and took the doors off, because there even being a door was a barrier for some people.
Yeah.
Especially if you're nervous and you've never ever gone to speak to somebody before. There's so many things that can you can just go, actually, I'm just not going to do it. And
And if you don't know your shit, which like
a lot of us don't. Maybe
no, but this is the thing. If you're getting a custom service, you compare to the person you're getting it from. Most likely, you don't know shit like about that thing. That's just the way it is. I mean, otherwise, you'd be doing it yourself, right?
Yeah.
But there is that feeling of feeling comfortable because of. Yeah, because of what? Exactly. What makes one person confident to ask for that expertise and another person it scares them away? But yeah, it would. I understand that feeling, and if I ask other women, I that's the feedback I get, and it's kind of how I feel about. That's how I feel it, the reaction is, and that I feel that's why people haven't been. Why non-white males haven't been in touch with us so much.
I think it's just, it's really easy for people to fall back on like the systems, for lack of a better word, systems of oppression, because that's kind of how we've always been operating in society. And it's like, we don't question, well, why is it then that it's only white men that are buying from us? And it's because the systems that we're operating in benefit white men. And so,
they
have the confidence, and they're like, this is for me, I'm going to take that. And then no one else sees, like, can I do this? Like, there's white guys doing it, but like, as a, you know, for a black woman, can I do this? Like, I don't see myself in any of this.
Yes.
So why would I even try? So it's like this, there's one, some people are at, like, trying to find quick solutions, and they talk about like diversity training or like use a black person in your marketing, but I feel like those are really band-aid measures, and that like a lot of these issues are very deep structural questioning of how we operate through this world, which is why you feel uncomfortable. That's totally normal, but I want more people to feel uncomfortable and think about like, well, then if I feel uncomfortable, how can I make things easier? How can I remove these barriers? And
yeah, I think a lot about Aisha McGowan a lot. And she always said, like, feeling uncomfortable is good because it's highlighting that there's an issue.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And like picking apart.
Is.
Yeah, and picking apart, you know, the actual elements that are making you uncomfortable and why. And, you know, thinking about terminology and just starting to break stuff down a lot more is like what we actually need to do, because people don't do things when they feel uncomfortable. That's almost like a kind of humanistic trait where I think we're like, no thanks.
Yeah.
I'm like, like leaning into that and going, okay, this isn't, you know, this doesn't make me feel great, but to push through it, you know, you're going to have a better outcome in the end. And yeah, to push, to support people who aren't, like, I like the phrase nerdy. I think that is a fun way of describing it, because you can super geek out on elements about a bike, but if you don't understand what you're geeking about out about in the first place, that can't happen.
But what you get as well is you get customers who don't know anything but who want the custom service. And I have never come across a non-white male who does that. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think what's uncomfortable is, like, I don't want to say that these are bad things. Like, not, all of our customers are great. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. They do it. It's just sad that it's only them that feel the confidence to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or that feel like that they feel like they're owed it. Whereas the rest of us, like, you wouldn't. I don't know. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
If I don't know about something, I wouldn't ask for a custom service for it. But maybe.
So then the question to ask is how can I educate people about custom services and making it clear, like, this is for you. Like, this exists for you. It's okay.
Yeah,
you
it's
can
kind
ask
of a,
for it.
We're trying to figure out how to make. Same with, for example, I mean, more than wheels is the frames, right? It's like, if we just offer frames, like, to build a bike around a frame, like, you can either do it through a shop, but that's quite a big thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, most women that have been in touch, if I haven't been that many, they've always just said, like, oh, could you just spec out a full bike? And I don't really care. I don't really care. I just kind of wanted to be this price, or I kind of just like, or once you spec it out, then they say kind of what they like a little bit or whatnot. Or, but that's a very, very custom thing.
I think baby education steps. Is
baby yeah. steps, education.
But it's about offering, also maybe offering ways in, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, it, like that's time. Why we wanted to offer a bike for that reason. It's because we want to change our demographic a bit and kind of ease it in a little bit and not make us, you know, not make us be kind of unapproachable. And that's why we've changed the wheels. It's because we get, for the amount of people that we have, I think we get enough custom, we get enough wheel orders. But I would kind of like it to be, I would like us to be a bit more accessible.
Yeah. I think that's good. I think you want to, I kind of weirdly is just making me think about like tattoos, you know, and people always joke once you get one, you always want to get another one. And I think easing people into the concept and idea of wheel building and, you know, half custom built and not full custom built is a way of then like, oh, okay, I've done it once and it, you know, I recognize the difference, or I enjoy it and I like this and I like that. And it's like, yeah, it's not going to be the one time thing you're going to do. And that's also kind of what I like about bikes, is you do always have to keep thinking, like, what parts am I going to get next, or what am I going to improve
on? And once you get into it, then you
it's a slippery type,
because we are talking about getting people into it, right? I'm not talking about the fact that, I mean, there are loads of nerdy bike women out there. It's about people who are wanting to get into it.
You
don't want to scare them, because it's so complicated.
Just want to make it kind of quite easy. Stress-free, welcoming,
and then literally just thinking about how you present, you know, a shop window is our Instagram, you know, when you try to
it is now more than ever.
And you have to just try to, but I don't know, it's on our minds all the time, which is like you were saying, it's probably the main thing. And if it is on your minds, then it'll come out. Hopefully. I mean, you also have to put effort in, obviously, but like,
yes. But being aware of it is a good step, and just thinking every time, like, what can we be doing different and how can we be changing, like Jenny said, the systems that we're trapped in. And if there's anything you can do to fight against that, that's, you know, that's helping.
Keep fighting the good fight.
Yes,
basically
keep it up. Yeah,
we like hearing about like new people and accounts and podcasts. Can you recommend like a couple social media accounts or podcasts that you really enjoy and that we should be following?
And they don't have to be bike related, because I think it's just the joy of like finding out about something someone else really likes.
Yeah,
I just love finding new things to consume, new shows. And recommendations for me are like some of the best ways to do that.
I don't think mine would be bike related.
Go for it.
Between me and Sam, we have one smartphone. Sam spends a lot of time on TikTok, and he shows me
wow,
he shows me the little TikTok videos that he thinks are good. He always leaves me some. He always says, oh, I've left you a TikTok. There isn't one particular one. He spends a lot more time on social media, I think. He'd probably deny it, but I think he does than me. But on Instagram, there's a good one called Round Boys, which is just like very round animals. Very cute.
Great.
Round boys.
Love it.
They get very, like, very round cats and raccoons and stuff and puppies. They're very nice. There's podcasts. I kind of like listening to How I Built This, which is just like, have you guys heard that one?
Maybe. I've not listened to it, but I've heard of it.
I'm not super keen on the presenter, but it's just entrepreneurs like, or like business owners are talking about how they got there. So like Ben and Jerry and stuff like I don't know, like lots and lots and lots of them, like just big brand companies most of the time. Most of the time it's people who got very far with their brand, but it's just I quite like listening to how they got there, I guess, because I run a little business and
Yeah. It's nice to hear, because every single story is, it's only when it's a good story, I think, that he does a podcast about them. And every story is so different. There's absolutely no way to make a living making your own. There's no one way to get a business up and running. Like, there just isn't, which is nice to hear. Like, every story is so different. Quite like that. I quite like the Wild podcast. It's just like stories about bears and
bears
and wolves and lynxes.
Awesome.
Do they interview these animals?
Yeah. And they're like, oh, I see.
How do you feel about Boris Johnson?
He's like stalking them and stuff. It's funny. No. A funny one, but they don't do it anymore, that I really used, that I really liked. It's like one of my favorite podcasts, but they stopped doing it. It's called The Mystery Show. I really like that one. It's a Gimlet Media one. It's really funny.
Gimlet are very good, I think.
They had they stopped it because it cost them so much money, I think. Oh, because initially not that many people were listening, but they just do these investigations about, like, I think one of them is about how, something to do with Britney Spears.
No, that's good.
That's kind of it.
No, three. Yeah, three was perfect. So
Four is a bonus.
Four. I quite like. Do you guys know Daisy Mae Cooper?
No.
I quite like her TikTok. Do you know her? Do you know This Country?
No.
No.
Never mind. Okay, This Country is a good recommend. It's on BBC iPlayer. It's like a brother and sister in the Cotswolds who, or actually, they're cousins in the Cotswolds.
They should have called it Cousins in the Cotswolds. That's good.
You should watch it, though. It's very, very good. I highly recommend it.
Cool.
It's comedy. You should watch it.
I'll put it on
the
list.
Don't hear any real commitment here, but somebody else will recommend it. Somebody else will recommend it to you, and then you'll go, like,
classic.
Oh.
I do need at least, like, I need to be recommended something. Yeah, I need to be recommended it about 100 times, and then I'll watch it.
Somebody who's listening to this needs to get in touch with you and just go, like, yes I also very highly
bombard
recommend
us.
This Country. There you go.
Thank you.
Like what we do? Support us by becoming a third wheel. You'll be in good company. Claire Taylor.
Aurelia Venklovite.
Karina Fussell. Is it Fussell or Fussell?
Kirsty Chestnut.
Kate Thompson.
Sally Bremner.
Jonathan Rothwell.
Can we say Jonathan's name together?
Sure.
Yes, I love him.
3, 2, 1. Jonathan Rothwell. Annie McCarthy.
And Max Meyer.
Woo!
Thank you to our amazing third wheels. And if you want to join these cool, awesome people, become a third wheel today.
Squish that like button,
rate
us on iTunes, and
subscribe.
If you can't give us your money,
give us
your
stars.
And don't keep us a secret. Slam that
share
button and tell all your friends about our show.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.